Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolten.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you've all been cleared to know the truth. And you know what I was thinking about this week, Josh? I'm really glad we did not change our intro to Agent Coulson and Director Mace, because that would have lasted all of, like, what, 1 week? So yeah. I'm glad we just kind of stuck with, you know, the mission from Agent Coulson as operatives, because that's really what it is, what it always has been, what it should be.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. He's been calling the shots, you know. He's the
shot caller?
He's the shot caller. He's the man behind the curtain.
He's the man behind the man behind the curtain.
That's true, so, actually. In this case, it is.
Based on what we saw, yeah, this week. So, wow. People have crazy conspiracy theories, don't they? Guess we'll have to look into this a little more closely here. But, you know, it's all connected. Hashtag superior. Stellar episode, I thought, this week. There was so much packed into this. There are those episodes, and I'm sure you can relate to this, where you're watching the episode and, you know, stuff just kind of flies by, and all of a sudden you look down at your watch and you realize you're at the last commercial break, and you're like, wow, I can't believe there was so much going on. That was great. And then there are other episodes, at least of S.H.I.E.L.D. for me, where I'm like, this is awesome. I look at my watch and I'm like, we still have 30 minutes left, and I feel like I've already gotten a complete show in that first 30 minutes, you know.
Oh,
and then
yeah,
there's shows that other shows, not S.H.I.E.L.D., but other shows where you look at your watch and you go, oh my God, I can't believe there's still only 30 minutes to go. Oh crap.
Well, what's fascinating to me in this whole thing is that you still wear a watch.
Well, it's a Fitbit technically now.
All right. Okay.
I haven't had anything on my wrist, honestly, since maybe college. And I got a Fitbit recently, you know. It's helping me to be more of a, you know, a, a superior machine. You know, I'm trying to be all that I can be.
That's what you keep saying. I think you signed the Sokovia Accords. That's what I think happened.
It is possible as well. But it's cool, 'cause it, like, you know, tells my heart rate and how I slept and,
and it sends it all to the government.
Yeah. How I voted, all that kind of stuff. So, anyway, there was so much in the episode. I think there's a lot of stuff to discuss on the show this week. So why don't you just take us in there? I'm a little hungry. I'm going to get a snack while you are talking about the what the episode was here.
Hey, I got something I can serve up to you right now.
What's that?
How about a little hot potato soup?
Ooh, yummy! Like warm vichyssoise.
Wait, isn't vichyssoise cold?
Well, yeah, but this would be warm vichyssoise.
Okay.
I don't know. Vichy warm? Okay. I don't know. What would
well,
you call it?
Well, this was served up to us on January 31st, 2017, episode 12 from season 4. Hot Potato Soup was written by Greg Titley and directed by Nina Lopez Corrado.
Hot potato soup. Hot potato, hot potato.
You know, if I'm just hanging out, having a good time at Dave and Buster's or Alan Cam's or whatever, with my brother, playing little video games, maybe enjoying some downtime. The last thing I want is for a couple of Russian mercenaries with ties to the watchdogs and the villainous Senator Nadir to ruin the fun. But
yeah,
that's
man.
What happens.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Billy
I hear Koenig. You.
Tell you. It seems that one of the pieces of intel that the covert LMDs acquired for Dr. Radcliffe was that Coulson gave the Darkhold to one of the Koenig brothers. So now Radcliffe is using his muscular minions to try to get the information from the mysterious agent with the multiple faces. When threatening torture doesn't work, though, Radcliffe uses more technologically invasive ways to probe Billy's brain. And meanwhile, Coulson's team tracks down the remaining Koenigs to, you know, to keep them safe, mm-hmm. and also to try to rescue the Darkhold before the inhuman-hating bad guys get to it. Well, Fitz stays obsessively busy trying to solve the puzzle inside the LMD Radcliffe, but the impossibly complex code and the wily discourse of the artificial man is emotionally taxing.
Wow.
Well, it makes Mac want to just whack that head right off. Inspired by Simmons' pep talk, he finally recognizes what he has to do, and they finally realize that May is an LMD.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, sadly, despite all their efforts, Radcliffe still manages to get the Darkhold, leaving our team without the book or the real May, or a good place to start looking. Maybe down at the Soul Patch.
No, man, this is the Peace Palace. Hey, ho, Shield Storm troopers have to go. Wow, that was weird. Why would I be doing that? Maybe I'm an LMD.
You are? Does it just pop right out?
What's that? The plate on my head?
Yes.
I would say if I was an LMD, I would want one of them shiny glow in the dark brains like that. That's pretty cool looking.
I'm thinking of getting one myself anyway. I just, you know, it's stylish. It'd be fun at clubs. you know, if you find your keys in the dark, I suppose.
Yeah.
There's a lot of advantages to glowy brains.
I just being able to have a kind of a download of someone's brain, and we haven't seen what happened in this episode before, where he kind of just puts on the helmet, and it was very much reminded me of I always get these movies confused from the 80s with Natalie Wood, Brain Scan, Brainstorm. It was the one where they were able to transcend, you know, into someone else's mind and basically live their emotions and everything like that. And the problem was when somebody died, that person who was watching it started to die too. And it was, I just remember it being really creepy. And it was like Natalie Wood's last film right before she died and all this weird kind of stuff. So, but, no real news, to speak of this week other than, not that this is like one of my more super proud achievements, but I have to say I called it last week when we were trying to figure out, or when I was trying to figure out where they had taken the real May and Radcliffe. And I said it looked like a boat, but it could be a submarine, but it was pretty big, you know, a TV submarine. Yeah, it was TV submarine. I was right.
No, I have to say I am very impressed with your knowledge of submarinal architecture and decoration. I mean,
and the design of such for television shows by, you know, it's got to be big enough to put the camera in. But I mean, I was on a submarine last summer. I went to visit one up in Philadelphia Harbor. Now, granted, it was, you know, it wasn't a modern submarine. It was an old timey sub, but. You know, these things are not big. They're about as, you know, wide as half your body. And, you know, they're only like, you know, you got to be like 5'6" to be in these things comfortably. So they do have to build a little bit differently. Good thing Mac wasn't on there. If Mac has to go down there and save anybody.
They don't put Mac on submarine missions.
Forget about it.
That's typically one they save for the more petite. Probably not the Koenigs either, actually, thinking about that.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. It would be a little cramped for them. Now, granted, I have a cousin. He's like 6'7". He was in the Navy. He drew submarine duty early on in his career. I do not know, like, I mean, it was just one of those things. I think he rotated through a series of, you know, vessels, and a submarine happened to be one of them. And it's like, but, you know, the bunks, I don't know how he slept comfortably in one of those things. So, anyway.
Look like Will
we got
Ferrell
some information about upcoming episode titles, but I'm going to let you guys find that stuff out. If you want to, you can just look online and at the usual places. But sounds like exciting few more episodes here of the LMD storyline. I think what we might have gotten today as we record this, I think we might have gotten the last title of the LMD storyline we'll know, but it's I think we know about three or four titles out now. So there's a few more to go here. Sounds like they're getting ready to wrap it up. But so Hot Potato Soup, huh? That's the name of the episode this week, right?
I gotta say now this. A couple of our shows that we talk about this week,
yes,
were a little bit more lighthearted episodes, which were a much needed addition to my week. I just have to say it's been kind of a emotionally taxing week for me around here, you know, just a lot of work, overwhelming stuff. And so I was very happy to just kind of have a couple of lighter episodes. Some pretty heavy stuff happened in them, you know, but you also had the comic relief of certain characters. So, I'm glad they brought back Patton Oswalt for this. I enjoyed it a lot.
Patton Oswalt is amazing. And the fact that you can, you know, he can perform these different brothers and give each one, I mean, each one has just a little bit something different to it. It's really subtle, but, you know, the only other comic I think that would work in a good situation like this, I'd love to see them get Louis C.K. on, because he also can play, he's funny. And he's very smart, and but he can play, you know, straight. And I think that Patton Oswalt he's really skirting the line of being a comedian on a very serious show, but you know, he falls just on the other side of not being too absurd. But it's really close.
I think he is kind of over the line. And part of it is just his look, you know, I mean they cast based on the way people's looks, but also his voice and the way he uses it, because he is a more of a comedic actor. So, but it totally worked for this. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And I love the idea that, you know, some of the top agents in S.H.I.E.L.D. are people that you would not expect to be the top agents in S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's because of, you know, of course, because of stereotypes and things like that we're used to seeing in our world. But just the idea that the Koenig brothers are this skilled. I shouldn't say the Koenig brothers. The Koenig family.
The Koenig siblings.
That's right. That's right. Now, what if he played LT? That might have gone a little bit too over the top.
That would see. When I heard about LT, I'm like, wait a second. No. And you know, so. I think that would have been too over the top if he had. Well, it would have been. Yeah, it would have been farcical or something at that point if he had been in drag or something like that. The Koenig brothers, they are part of Operation Spanish Inquisition because nobody expects them, right? So Hot Potato Soup, though, what is this title about? So I kind of broke this down a little bit. Well, first off, LT, I believe, called the operation that they used to hide the Darkhold Operation Hot Potato.
Right. As I saw them passing around, that made sense to me.
Right. So Hot Potato, for those of you that either are getting too old to remember your childhood or never participated in this game, it's just a game where you have an object, and the object is to the object of the game is to pass the potato around as quickly as possible. I've actually seen people online using a real hot potato for this. But the thing is, if you hold on to it too long, you get, quote, burned. And
I don't think it's supposed to be taken literally.
Now that you can put stuff on YouTube, you know.
I hope they're not playing Red Rover.
Other than the name of a kind of a news show from the E Entertainment Channel, In the Soup means to be in trouble. So I thought that was quite an accurate description of, you know, what was going on with this. So you kind of had hot potato soup, you know, to kind of mix a couple metaphors as well, just because everybody, you know, basically we're at that point in this storyline where the good guys are finally kind of catching on to what's going on, but they are, you know, one step or two steps back from everybody, from the bad guys, and things do not seem to be going their way.
No. But the title's also delicious with a turkey sandwich, so.
Oh, well,
it serves kind of a double purpose.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. And then I'm going to put a question mark by this part, but I think we do. We finally get some answers about the mysterious Koenigs. So just to recap,
who everybody is here. We've got Eric, who died back at the Providence base. He was killed by Ward.
Curse you, Grant Ward.
Two, yeah. You got Billy. You got Sam. You got Thurston. That's got to be a reference to Gilligan's Island, right?
Thurston Howell? That's the only Thurston I have ever heard of before.
Okay. As a first name, right?
Yeah. Thurston Howell. Yeah, that's the only other one. Thurston Howell the Third.
And then Lovey. LT, who is the sister, which I'm kind of racking my brains to figure out what LT might stand for. There's lots of potential names. And other than the fact that LT is an abbreviation, the letters LT are an abbreviation for lieutenant, a military term, which I didn't really think was appropriate. And the subtitles, you know, had L period, T period. So I don't know that it's really necessary, but they continued doing the jokes about them potentially being clones or robots. They were talking about the programming. I think it was Agent Davis at the end who was like, wait a second, because there was mentioned that they worked on the original LMD project at S.H.I.E.L.D. or they were part of the original LMD project. And he says, so they are. And then one of the brothers jumps in and says, technicians, we were technicians. So is that the answer? Is that what we're going to get from them? Or is that just another like red herring? Or does it matter?
You know, I think it's a little of both. I think it gives us a little bit about their background of what they did, but it really doesn't clear it up perfectly who these guys are. Why was there four of them? I mean, were they just quadruplets? They really don't clear it up, and I don't think they ever will. I think this is one of those kind of running gags, actually.
Yeah. And there's no reason that they need to clear it up. And, you know, it's kind of become it's great because, didn't he show up in the first season or was it the second season?
Koenig?
Originally. If it was, it was really, really late in that first season. But it might have been second season, I think.
I think it was the second season.
So that means, you know, when we first saw Eric and then we were introduced to either Billy or Sam or both, you know, we've been talking about LMDs for at least, you know, 2.5 years then.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
I would say more than that because we speculated that maybe Coulson was an LMD at the beginning of the series.
That's right, because we didn't know how he had come back from being killed in the Avengers.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah.
So, just going to say as a side note, according to the Marvel Cinematic Universe wiki page, Ilsa Koenig was Eric Koenig's sister in the comics. I don't know if that would have anything to do with LT. I don't know how you get LT from Ilsa, but
okay, yeah. Well, because I mean, in the comics, in the Marvel 616 universe of the comics, Eric Koenig was an entirely different type of character. I mean, there wasn't
right.
You know, he was a muscular, agent kind of guy, like Coulson and all these other people. So.
And everybody else in the comic universe.
And everybody else in comics, right. But, I thought that was really fun that they continued to tease us with that. And I was really shocked. I know the show's on at 10 now, so they can get a little more racy. And I still want to keep this kind of PG in our podcast. But it's around 10:45, they kind of had a... what kind of is it? It was a joke
blue
about
joke?
All sorts of DNA around the house. LT made a joke about the amount of DNA that was left around the house and how disgusting it was.
Yeah, like fingernails and eyelashes and things like that.
That
right?
must have been what it was. I'm sorry, I was thinking something more like hot potato soup or something like that. So,
well, regardless, I got to say them Koenigs are tough.
They are tough.
Even Billy. I mean, Billy. Well, maybe especially Billy. I think he really probably would have held up under torture. I don't think he would have given him the information.
Probably not. And now, I also totally saw through the ruse with Radcliffe there. Did that fool you at all?
No, I didn't think Radcliffe was really caught, although I did think they were going to do a little number on him and do some maybe some torture, just based on some of the things they've done on this show in the past. But I did not at first I thought, well, now wait a minute, why would he be captured if he's he's not really captured. So plus some of the stuff he was saying was totally obvious if you'd known he was on the bad side anyway. But I don't think Billy did know. I don't even think he knew who he was.
Right, right. And to me, I think in SHIELD training that would be like torture 101. You know, if they all of a sudden throw you in with somebody that claims to be your ally, asking you some weird questions and stuff like that, you know, don't answer them.
I have to remember that at my next job interview.
That's always a good thing to know. Just, you know, just to be safe.
Never trust anyone.
Yeah. So, well, and going along with the the talk that the Koenigs had about programming and stuff like that, we got into more discussion of humans are a function of their programming Radcliffe LMD was kind of talking with this with Fitz and with Mac.
Yeah, and especially with, yeah.
I just kind of wanted to get your take on that as kind of a, there was actually a lot of philosophy, I think, that was kind of brimming in this episode, and I kind of wanted to get your take on that as, you know, are we really that different from the LMDs? You know, aren't we just some kind of software running inside some kind of hardware?
Well, sure. I mean, this is that whole philosophical discussion about artificial intelligence, right? I just read an interesting article about whether we could even really have true artificial intelligence or not. I can't even remember where I read it, so I won't reference it or anything like that. But for a computer to really be able to be independently thinking. But in this case, because of the way they were designed and created, it feels to me as if just because they're artificial, just because they're made out of materials, does that make them less living? He gave some really good arguments. And I think, I mean, they were so good, I think it even gave Mac pause a little bit.
Well, it totally gave Mac pause, especially when he said, why did you feel like you needed to turn me back on to kill me? I was like, wow, that is a really compelling argument right there.
What really fascinates me about the May and the Radcliffe LMDs, especially, is their ability to improvise the way what would you call the person that they were created from? Or what would it be?
Oh, the template, maybe?
I guess, yeah. That they really are able to act like that. Whereas, Ada didn't necessarily have a template. She was, we don't really know, but not that we've seen, though.
Well, Ada works off of a mechanical brain, some kind of synthetic system that Radcliffe designed, whereas the Maybot and the Radbot are working off of one of these quantum brains that Ada designed from having looked into the Darkhold.
Yeah, right. And so that fascinates me, how they're able to improvise, how they're able to – I'm choosing my words carefully because I don't want to say think for themselves necessarily, but that's what I'm getting at. They are almost thinking for themselves. So doesn't that give them life? You know, I think therefore I am is the idea.
Yeah, they're more autonomous.
Yeah. And I'm not even going to say Ada is not doing that. She's not doing that as advanced as these two are. But she certainly is showing signs of that. And even if she goes about it slower, doesn't that make her aware, alive? I don't know, however you want to call it. I think what Mac is doing, and especially, I'll come back to the the Watchdogs and those people, because their beef is more with the Inhumans and not so much the robot. As soon as they found out about Ada, they didn't stop her and automatically hate her.
But kind of, yeah. So yeah, let's come back to that. Yeah. I got some stuff I want to say about that. So, but
the thing with Mac is, I think he's got kind of this block in his brain, this brick wall that he can't quite see past. They're fake. They're not real people. They are killers, and that's all there is to it. I'm going to take him out.
Is this going back a little bit? Are we jumping back in some of Mac's arguments and motivation to stuff that we talked about maybe five six or seven episodes ago, where it's kind of that science versus faith argument?
Right. Yeah. And that's what I think Mac is for sure not maybe looking at a big picture that he should consider, a moral big picture. And I think Fitz would, if it hadn't been the fact that it was Radcliffe, and if it wasn't for some of the things that the fake Radcliffe was saying to him about his father and things, because it put that emotional barrier up for Fitz as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting question, because, you know, at what point do you assume that life exists? I mean, you know, when you're chatting with someone online, I mean, you know, you're assuming that they're human on the other side, but they may not be. You know,
could just be a
bot or something like that.
I just recorded all this on my phone and set it in front of the microphone so I could go have some pizza.
Man, why didn't I think about that? That is brilliant.
I knew you were going to say that.
So, well, you mentioned the Radbot going on about Fitz and Fitz Senior. Since Fitz is his last name, I guess Fitz Senior would
Daddy Fitz.
Daddy Fitz. My assumption is, and you just tell me, if you agree with this or if you had some other thoughts, but since the Radbot, his brain template was based off of, you know, everything that the real Radcliffe knew and had in his brain, that all this stuff that he's telling Fitz is real, unless these are all thoughts that were in Radcliffe's head. So they are most likely true unless Radcliffe had always intended to lie about this stuff to Fitz at some point, in which case, you know, it was a lie. But I feel like he really did go to school with Leo's dad.
Yeah.
They rode on the train, they sat next to each other, and he told him just a few months ago, whatever that was. So do you think are we to take that on face value there?
I think so. They didn't present us any reason to not believe him, especially since they didn't say what he told him. So we don't even know, and now I don't think we'll find out, at least not from the Radbot.
Right.
So but what I think that's going to do is set up the scenario with Fitz and the real Radcliffe to see if Fitz can kind of move past this trauma that he's had with his father, whatever it is.
So you think we'll get a confrontation when Fitz next sees the real Radcliffe, that they'll kind of have it out? And do you think we'll get an answer on this?
I kind of do. Yeah. I mean, it was something that was put right out in front of us, and then they didn't reveal it.
Bait and switch.
So I think it's going to be important.
I'm wondering
if not from Radcliffe, then from Fitz's actual father. Maybe. Whoa. What if? Sorry. Okay. We know that there's going to be a third bad guy. Yes.
There's going to. Well, what? There's going to be a third storyline this season, and that's what I was thinking. We're going to kind of end the LMD storyline, and I think we're going to roll right into something having to do with Fitz's dad.
I that just occurred to me. I didn't
Isn't
even
that cool?
put that together. That yeah, is cool.
It's neat when it comes to you writing the show, isn't it?
I want to hold Fitz Senior here for a second and ask you a question, because you're going to start talking about the superior here.
I am.
Okay.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. You're going to hold on to Fitz Sr. while I'm
going to hold on to Fitz Sr. Yeah.
Okay.
He's, I can hold him. He's not like Moonlight. I can hold him. He's a pretty beefy guy. I just put my arms around him. He's right there. So
I had to kind of I've never heard that phrase before. Like,
no, you haven't?
No. Is that where? We don't get a lot of moon out here. I don't know. We have moonshine. But
I don't think Koenig was like moonshine.
Well, I was like, wait, is it because, wait, it's easy to catch moonlight because it was pretty easy to catch him. I was like, I guess I was confused because, you know, we saw it go down without much hassle, right? I mean, it wasn't like, you know, trying to catch Daisy or something like that, or Quake or Sky, whatever. but, and then I realized that, you know, Coulson was trying to say, oh my gosh, how would he catch this guy? Cause these guys are like, they like slip through your fingers, I guess is what he's saying, that, you know, that the moonlight is there and you can't actually.
Yeah. I either think they just really got the drop on the Koenig brothers there, or
it's because they were drinking, probably.
Or Coulson maybe,
yeah.
Or Coulson was, I don't know, you know, playing him up a little bit. Do you remember when Indiana Jones was telling the Nazis that they'd never catch Walter Donovan?
Yeah,
because he was.
Yes, yeah, that's it. It's just he builds up his agents, tells little tall tales about them, just so people think they're better than they are.
But I think they really did kind of get the drop on him. It was kind of lucky, because that's why he gave the Darkhold to him in the first place, because he thought it would be really safe, which it actually ended up being pretty darn safe, because
wow.
Even though they did catch him, they put it in a really safe place. If they hadn't been able to, you know, scan the dude's brain, they wouldn't have found it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And when do you put that in your plans? I'm going to hide something. This is going to be totally safe, you know, unless somebody scans my brain and just look. I mean, you don't think about that stuff.
Well, I just finished up a project management course. So what we would do is we would see that as a potential risk, and then we would come back and revisit that later. But we wouldn't know about it until later. So we'd go into lessons learned area. And so we'd finish this current project and we'd say, well, now the next time we do have to be aware that it's possible to scan people's brains. So the next time we try to do something like this, we need to remember to prepare for that and just put it on a little card and file it away.
I wish I'd known that was a possibility 40 years ago. There's a lot of things I would have done differently in my life.
All right. So as you said, I did want to get into talking about the superior. We've been, who is the superior? Who is the superior for the past couple episodes? And I'm a little underwhelmed at the moment. It was a creepy intro and I'm like, oh, you know, cause the guy looks, you know, just he's swarthy and stuff. I looked up where this actor's from. He's from New York. So not too scary. He's actually scarier looking, in some stills I saw of him. He was in the 100 on the CW, I guess. He was like all covered in mud or hopefully it was mud.
I heard that was good, but I haven't watched it.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear it's a pretty good, sci-fi show, you know, for all things considered with CW and all that. Anyway. So we find out that the superior is this Russian Anton Ivanov, who calls himself the superior man, and he thinks humans were built to last, unlike machines and other inferior things. And he talks about the old ways, how they were superior, how they were built to last, and man is a superior machine, which is a really, you know, interesting metaphor in this whole discussion. We've had talk about the Inhumans and their genesis and stuff. And now here's this, I would say humanist, I guess, just in terms of like trying to describe it. Someone who is, you know, very much about, he's very pro-human, let's put it that way. And, you know, he feels that man, and I'm assuming he means mankind, but who knows, he may actually just mean men, is you know, very superior. And I would assume that's because we have survived as long as we have. We're very adaptable. What were your thoughts on our introduction to this character here?
Well, first of all, I kind of felt like you, a little bit underwhelmed, so much so that I wondered if even he was the true superior, like that. That's just kind of what they told Radcliffe, but there was actually somebody more superior than him or up above him, but I don't know. I mean, that's kind of how I felt, like you. I'm like, this is a superior? I thought maybe there was somebody else behind the scenes.
Well, I thought about that initially, but then when Daisy's research led them, you know, to backtrack the Russian that beat up and captured the Koenigs, that he was in the same unit as the two guys that tried to attack Mace at the press conference the other week, and they tied all those guys back to this rich Russian philanthropist, Anton Ivanov. And it's like, well, that answers a lot of our questions we've been asking. Where's all this money coming from? It's being funneled down from him. He's like the anti, he's like the head anti-inhumanite person. So, you know, he's funding Nadir. Nadir has ties to the watchdogs. You've got also these other paramilitary organizations, parts of Hydra and stuff that are all, like Coulson said, they're all banding together to fight off the Inhumans, you know, these weird and really bad factions of humans are banding together to fight the Inhumans.
Yeah, he's definitely a creepy guy. And he has got, I said I wanted to kind of talk in about Mac and his relationship to robots, or not, or his disdain, I guess, for robots. And it reminds me of people like this, the Superior and the Watchdogs and Nadir, and their unwillingness to look at Inhumans as anything but something that should be eliminated.
Something that's sub, right?
Yep,
beneath them.
Beneath them, yes. Oh, that's a good way to put it, beneath them, because I definitely think they all feel that way. You know, I think Nadir thinks they're a threat, but I still think she thinks they're beneath them. So, but it's an interesting parallel because, you know, Mac's a good guy. He's one of the heroes, right?
Right.
And so you want your heroes to be perfect. You want your heroes to make those ethical choices. And you know, whether that's an ethical choice or not, that's certainly debatable. But it's a good comparison because these guys, despite the fact that they're living things that they hate and want to eliminate, it's still kind of the same idea.
That is a really interesting parallel, and I don't know that I had connected that as far as you had. That's really interesting, though.
Well, you know, I try to look out for the underdog. Especially when I'm getting my shoes shined because...
Oh, so. Yeah.
That's when underdog usually shows up, which is strange. I don't know why.
I've never really put that together. So, well, first off, I was going to ask you if you'd ever tried that trick with vodka, smelling an onion,
no,
or if you'd
no,
ever
I
heard
have not.
Of it. I'd never.
No,
I found out about.
I
that.
I usually just take my onions, either you know, just plain or in a fajita. That's.
Yes, in fajitas.
That trick does work with fajitas, though. I'll say
it does
that.
Enhance their flavor. Yes, I agree.
It does very much.
We had fajitas this week. We only had a really teeny small onion and not enough onion. It was not good.
That's not okay.
I think this trick is going to show up in Arrow later this season. They're going to see it on here and they're going to, oh wow, hey, that's a pretty good idea. And so they're going to have Oliver doing that in Russia with vodka. But
maybe that's an old Russian trick.
It could be. Could be. Yeah, I'd never heard of that. So. But interesting though that, you know, you've got the potential that maybe there's another person above Superior that he may just be the money. You know, he really struck me as someone, you know, who was trying to better himself or whatever. You know, he seemed very physically fit, he seemed very intelligent, you know, and if he is has all this money, like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent said, had, you know, found out. He's obviously someone who's, you know, worked very hard. And it was interesting to hear his take on why he believed that Inhumans weren't worthy or worthwhile or whatever. Was that they have this great power, but he says they did not labor to earn it. Now, on my first, when I first heard him say that, he puts a pause in there somewhere, like right around labor. And I was like, is that because he's saying humans are not born of woman? You know, I thought he was going to something like that. Like, you know, because they basically they're kind of created out of nothing, you know, much like a clone would be, I would guess, you know, because they're we could probably have the same conversation, you know, like that we're having with LMDs about clones or, you know, in humans, too. They're all, you know, there's all ethical and moral questions that arise from characters like this, and especially in like the sci-fi dramas and stuff like that. Did you notice that? Did that strike you weird or anything?
I did, actually. When I first heard him say it, I was wondering where he was going with it, and then, you know, he finished up. So
I also, when I heard this, when he was talking about, you know, every time anybody says anything having to do with power, especially in Marvel, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, my brain jumps directly to, you know, Spider-Man, right? You know, with great power comes great responsibility and that stuff. But also the way he was talking about how they didn't earn their power, it made me think of Mahatma Gandhi's seven deadly sins, which are seven things that Gandhi thought were more of a sin than like the what you would think of as the, you know, the Catholic seven sins from, you know, from the Bible. Okay. And two of these I think really apply well to our discussion that we're having here on S.H.I.E.L.D. The first one is wealth without work, which, you know, could transfer to, you know, power without labor. I think basically these people have a wealth of power, you know,
what humans,
the Inhumans do. Right. But they didn't have to work for it. He's labored. The superior, Anton has labored to build his body stronger. You know, to do exercises to get him have a physique looking like he looks. So he's really had to work at that. Whereas, you know, some of the Inhumans, you know, have had these powers like Quake. She didn't really have to do any exercises. She just kind of got this power. Now, granted, we do, and we have seen these characters work with their powers. The powers just don't happen for these characters. We've seen that, you know, Daisy had to work to be able to control her power. Who's the guy that could melt stuff? Joey. We had to see him work to be able to control his power. We had to see Yo-Yo work to control her power. So, you know, there may not necessarily be something to what Anton's saying, but of course that's his perspective on it. The other deadly sin, as Gandhi puts it, is science without humanity. And that's what we're looking at with the LMDs. We've got this holy, artificial, scientifically created apparatus that is having that performs and behaves as much as a human does, as a living, breathing, biological entity does, but there's no humanity in it. I mean, there is and that could be argued too, because that was the point here, is that Radbot was saying that, you know, well, maybe I have a soul, because you can't quantify what a soul is. So I just thought, you know, some real, again, really interesting philosophical stuff that's kind of stuck down in here, and it may not be something you see right on the outset of the episode, but, you know.
Oh, no, I think those are heavy themes for this episode especially, and the science without humanity, I think, is a really interesting take, and that's continuing theme throughout this mm-hmm. season.
Well, yeah, especially, I mean, again, dealing with the LMDs, dealing with the, even going back to season one with the experiments, with the Kree blood that brought Coulson back to life. You know, there's elements of that. It's like, you know, if you don't have the ethics or the morality to be doing some of these things that, you know, the scientists are doing, should you really be doing it? Just to quickly let everybody know what some of these other deadly sins are that Gandhi comes up with. He also has pleasure without conscience, knowledge without character, commerce without morality, also known as business without ethics, religion without sacrifice, and politics without principle. So some interesting things there. And so I think I'm going to keep this kind of up on my show notes here just to see where else, you know, this may, the writers and the producers, you know, they do have a lot of philosophical themes and just other things that they want to say in their shows. And I'm wondering if there's any of this other stuff that we might see at some point. So,
yeah. Well, and those are common, you know, ethical lessons that we try to raise our children with, you know, so we'll, that would be interesting to see that we don't always succeed in mm-hmm. doing as adults.
yeah, definitely. Now you had, you brought up an interesting question here about, the Radbot.
It went by so fast, but yes. as they were trying to break, you know, crack the code, trying to get into that brain before he had actually, pried his scalp off. I think that was before he did that.
Yeah, it was.
The Radcliffe bot, he started spewing out this, what I assumed was Latin. It sounded like Latin.
It was creepy sounding, whatever it was there.
Yeah. And I, you know, I didn't know what it was, and it went, like I said, it went by so fast. So I was wondering what that Latin translated into and if it meant anything, or was it just, you know, random stuff coming out of his head?
Ha 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 ha. No pun intended.
So you looked it up for me.
Yeah, I'm not going to attempt to pronounce the Latin. I took
okay.
a romance language, but it was French, and Latin is Greek to me.
No, it's Latin.
Well, it's like Greek.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
It's kind of, you know, it's all part of the Peloponnesian.
I sang a lot of choir, so I could probably figure most of it out, but that's okay. You go back and listen to the episode, and that'll do it justice. But what is the English translation of it?
Well, according to Google Translate, so thanks, Sergey, the first sentence that he says translate to, "I hope that our friendship will be everlasting." And, of course, if you remember the way it was pronounced, I mean, it was this very mechanically intoned. I mean, it was like, it reminded me very much of the demon speaking through Reagan in The Exorcist.
Oh.
It was just creepy. But anyway, the first sentence was...
Yeah, it was a lot like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, okay. And only his head could move. I was waiting for it to kind of like spin around or something. I thought that, you know. And you know, with the whole Darkhold, you know, it's like... Is he uttering like these mysterious phrases from the Darkhold or something? Anyway.
You know what I wondered about that as Darkhold? And this relates to what you just said. Is... You know, the LMD Radcliffe got its memories and thoughts and everything, emotions and everything, from the Radcliffe's
yes.
brain, like a scan of the Radcliffe's brain. And it was after Radcliffe had glanced
yes.
at the Darkhold.
Yes. Yes.
Is he getting pure Radcliffe, or is he getting Darkhold enhanced Radcliffe? Or I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. Well, like, oh, that's a great point. And I'm going to switch gears here real quick, because the Maybot said that, you know, because Coulson accused it of May would never act like that. And it's like, well, Radcliffe made some adjustments. You know, as we found out, he had changed, quote unquote, the Maybot's programming, you know, to have certain parameters that she would not be able to reveal her mission and all that kind of stuff. So we don't really know how the Darkhold has affected Radcliffe. But yeah, this is a copy. So Radcliffe's programming may be affected there, and they may be, well, not anymore, unless Fitz saved yeah. something before they burned it.
Hmm.
But they might be able to.
I don't think he would
do something.
I don't.
Yeah.
So that's what one of the things I was wondering in that first line. I hope that our friendship will be everlasting. Is the fake Radcliffe telling Fitz that he respects him and he wants to be his friend? I mean, he said it in Latin. So did he say it because he meant it, you know, because that's how he really felt, even though he wasn't the fake Radcliffe, it was those emotions were in there somewhere. Is that, you know,
is that the Darkhold talking to Radcliffe?
Oh, there you go.
I don't know.
I didn't think about that. That's interesting, too.
I also don't know how much we're really supposed to read into this, but it's a cool
me
little
neither.
Easter
I just,
egg.
it was so exciting to me when I saw this translation. I'm like, oh, these are cool things. Okay, so first sentence. I hope that our friendship will be everlasting. What else does he say?
Okay, then the second sentence, then there's a little pause, and then he speaks two more sentences. The first one is, a wise man who speaks little. Now, that's the translation I got from Google Translate, but it's probably, you know, something more along the lines of, it is the wise man, you know, who knows when to speak or something along those lines, right? You know, it's a, you know, wise man knows when to talk and when not to talk.
Okay. So here's my thought on that.
Okay.
So wise man, who's the wise man? Is it Radcliffe? That's wise, but he can't speak. He speaks a little because he can't tell Fitz what he wants to because of his programming. Just like the fake May wanted to tell Coulson who she really was, what was really going on. She wanted to attack Radcliffe, but she couldn't do any of those things because Radcliffe programmed her not to. Well, I'm assuming Radcliffe programmed the fake Radcliffe. Similar things. He can't reveal where the real Radcliffe is. He can't reveal the, you know, all of the secrets that he didn't want S.H.I.E.L.D. to know. So is that what he's saying here? A wise man who speaks little. I'm a wise man. You know, I'm smart. I like you, but I can't tell you what I want to tell you.
Hmm. Or it could be that you're the righteous man and I'm the shepherd and it's the world that's evil and selfish. You know, I'd like that, but man, that is not true. Truth is you're weak and I'm the tyranny of evil men. But I'm trying. I'm really trying to be the shepherd. Paraphrased from Pulp Fiction. no, gee, man, you're really taking this to an entire different level than I was even thinking about here. All right, so you want me to give
anytime
you the last
anytime there's
one?
Latin, I have to like look, because Latin's like the root of, you know, our language. It's like, so it's always interesting to me when something is presented in Latin.
Well, technically,
it seems
English
like
is a Germanic language, but I'm not going to argue with you about that. There is a lot of Latin roots to English
sure.
as well. So. All right, so the last, line, alea icata est. The die is cast. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know what exactly this means. Obviously, the die is cast. That means something has begun. But we don't know what has begun. What is the die that's cast? Is he talking about the Darkhold, you know, whatever Radcliffe wants to do with the Darkhold? That line perplexes me because I'm not sure what's coming. As, you know, Fitz is the same way. They don't know what's coming. Nobody knows what's coming.
Right. Well, so
except for what Radcliffe has planned. He knows.
Historically,
what he wants to do.
Yeah. Historically, the die is cast is a phrase that's attributed to Julius Caesar when he crossed the Rubicon River in 49 BC. It's, you know, basically it's an event that's happened that cannot be unmade, you know, that cannot be changed. So it's, you know, we've made this decision. And that's it. There's no turning back. It's you know.
Like in craps. You throw those dice, and whatever they land on, that's what happens. You can't change it.
Unless you've got the little clicker thing that makes the die flip over or whatever. So, wow, that's good job, Josh. I mean, that's really again a lot more than I was even thinking about there. So.
Well, and look, you know. Who knows how important all that stuff is? They gave it to us in Latin and they didn't give us a translation. And how many people are going to go out there and look it up, you know? So,
well, I don't know. 50%, I would say.
Well, you know what? they even if they don't all look it up, we translated it for them. Well, you did. And now we're presenting, so now more people know. So maybe it is.
Yeah, that's cool.
But it was just I don't know. Those lines struck me as something that could be really interesting. So either way, it wasn't an accident. The writers put it in there on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they reveal it to the audience or not, it still, I think, is part of the overall story that's coming.
No, that's a good point. And so then the superior starts to tell Radcliffe that, you know, there's one other thing that, you know, he thinks about with the Inhumans and stuff that is responsible for everything that's going on. And I'm like, oh, are we going to get, I honestly thought for a second we were going to get the Watcher from Marvel, who's this, If you haven't seen it, it's this bald dude with a really, really big head who wears a toga. He lives on the moon, and he shows up at really important events in the Marvel Universe. And all he can do is observe. He's a race called he's individually called a Watcher. Owatu, and is his name, and he also is the race is called the Watchers as well. But then he Anton shows us that it's Coulson has been showing up at all these events where, and we see a picture from the New Mexico crash where the Thor's hammer was, and you know, he talks about how this guy is dead, but he keeps showing up, and Radcliffe's like, oh no, he's not dead. He's very much alive, and I can take you to him. And it's like, and it's Coulson. And I'm like, that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering how this is all going to play out because I don't know. I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, it's like I said at the beginning of the show, it's an interesting, weird conspiracy theory this guy has, but really there's no basis in fact to it. It's just the guy works for S.H.I.E.L.D. and he happens to be there. I mean, has he really been there for all the weird stuff?
I don't know. Is it a coincidence? I don't know.
Is Coulson part of a? I mean, Coulson's not part of a conspiracy or anything like that, is he?
I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. But it is interesting.
He could be drawn to these events, I guess. Right? I mean.
Oh, maybe. Maybe I hadn't thought about that.
You know, just like. According to the comics, he's a huge, like, superhero fan. So, of course, it's, you know, he's kind of like a fanboy for this. I don't know. That's, I really don't know where they're going with that. So I'm interested to see what they do.
I think the Superior is probably just making some connections that aren't there.
That don't really exist, right?
And, of course, he's making assumptions, just like people that have these attitudes do, whether it's toward the Inhumans or the LMDs, or you make these assumptions and worry and get paranoid.
Paranoid if, you know, there are robots out there or Darkholds out there or people with powers, you know? I don't know.
No. But being paranoid that it's going to affect you as bad as they think it is, that's the paranoid part.
Yeah. Well, any feedback this week that you saw?
You know, people are asking us still. We got a tweet from Michael. If we know when the Season 3 Blu-ray DVD is going to be coming and the Agent Carter Blu-ray DVD. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
We still don't have any information on that. And
when the Darkhold freezes over. At some point.
It could be somewhere around there. But as soon as we find out, we will definitely let you guys know.
No, I think we're just going to... You know, we need to be responsible about that kind of information. We should really just, you know, parse it out when we think it's important.
Oh, okay.
So I think we just need to be
careful. As soon as we find out, we will decide when we want you to know.
Exactly. How about that? That's okay. A good idea. Obviously, Patton Oswalt in the episode makes her some great references. So a lot of interesting stuff.
10 in the first 5 seconds.
Yeah. First time through, I saw, you know, the majority of these because they were pretty obvious. I got some really cool Easter eggs, though, going through the second time. So, obviously, Star Wars, a lot of quotes from Star Wars and a quote from Back to the Future at the beginning as the two brothers are driving around on the on their hoverboards in the arcade. That does not seem safe. And as you pointed out, which I completely forgot about, the Darth Vader helmet that he was turning into a bomb. No, wait, it's he's turning it into a an alarm clock, which I didn't.
It's a cool alarm clock.
Yeah, that's one of those. That would kind of freak you out, I think, to have Vader sitting next to your bed, blinking at you and stuff. There was a reference to Red Dawn, which I know there was a remake of this, but I never saw it, but. When I talk about Red Dawn, I'm talking about the original one where it's where the Russians invaded and the only people that could save us were a bunch of country high school kids.
Yeah, that's right. So get ready, high school kids.
Yeah.
Never know what's going to happen.
Sam referred to Radcliffe as being Gollum-y when he was talking, acting kind of crazy about how the Darkhold kind of makes you crazy. That's a really interesting parallel. I hadn't even... likened it to that, but yeah, Radcliffe has kind of touched this forbidden fruit and he's gotten all Gollum-like. Black Widow was mentioned as being part of the Quake fan fiction, which I had not Googled for yet. I'm kind of scared to.
Yeah, you might not want to Google that one.
I'll send you the copy when I get okay. it.
Yeah, so, sounds good. Thanks.
We saw in the flashback when they mentioned the that the Darkhold was put into the Labyrinth, which is a shield, another shield facility. It was part of the Pleasant Hill Public Library. There was a brief sign that you saw. Pleasant Hill was famous in a recent Avengers storyline, Attack on Pleasant Hill, I believe, where they made this fake town called Pleasant Hill that acted as a prison to hold all of these villains. It did not work out very well for the Avengers because turns out that villains don't like being tricked into thinking that they're actually living a idyllic life when people mess with their heads and stuff like that, like they did here. Hmm.
Interesting.
And then in the obituary for Coulson's death that the superior had, it lists the date of his death as the release date for the Avengers, which was 5/4/2012, May 4th, 2012, which of course that's when he died. 'Cause that's when the Avengers was released. So
that's when I saw him die.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly when I saw him die as well. So I thought that was pretty cool. A lot of, you know, cool little things they're putting in there. And, I like when they throw those kind of things in there, like the Pleasant Hill thing or the, you know, just the date on the, you got to freeze frame this. Oh, and also at the beginning, you mentioned Dave and Buster's at the beginning or Al and Cam's. Well, if you look at Billy's bio, when it pops up, you find out that they were the bar arcade that they were at was called Al and Cam's in Massachusetts. So there you go. I think that's all I've got for this week.
That was a lot this week.
I'm tired now.
Well, let's go have some hot potato soup. That'll perk you right up.
How about some fruit salad? Maybe? I need some more fiber.
Okay, we'll get some, not as much starch for you.
Exactly. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, if you enjoy this episode, we'd love to have some feedback from you. So hop over there on iTunes and leave us a little bit of feedback and write a nice little message for everybody to see. Or if you want to talk to us, you can – lots of ways you can do that. You can send us an email, shield@randomchatter.com. Also, you can visit our Twitter feed, @AgentsPodcast. And you can check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AgentsPodcast.
And if you're enjoying – listening to us on this particular show, why don't you check us out on one of our other podcasts like Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, or Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, both which are also available at randomchatter.com. And the shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And if you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to tell your friends about us, whether they're in humans or LMDs, we don't care. We just really want to count downloads. I really don't mind anybody listening to us. So,
Watch Dogs, did you want the Watch Dogs listening to us?
Watch Dogs are perfectly fine. You know, maybe they'll learn something.
There's room for all of us at the Shield table.
I think so, yeah. So, anyway, for this week's Agents of Shield case files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.